Good morning and welcome. My message this morning is the word that frees us the most. I probably don't even have any guess at what that word is right now, do you? Joel may have tipped my hat quickly on that. I'm glad he did, though, because I'm going to do the same. So here's the thing about love. It's hard to fully put into words what it means. Love can cause us to experience emotions from agony all the way to ecstasy. It can cause us to accomplish some of the most amazing things, and equally, love can cause us to sort of stagnate. Love can make you happier than you have ever been, sadder than you have ever been, angrier than you have ever been. It can elate you and deflate you. And sometimes both within seconds of each other. We could probably sit here and list off the emotions associated with love for this entire hour. But finding the words to explain those feelings is, well, finding those words to describe what love is can be difficult at best. The great Greek playwright Sophocles once said that one word frees us from all the weight and pain of life, and that word is love. And while that is certainly lovely, it certainly doesn't get us any closer to a true definition of love. I do like the definition of love that comes from Hindu monk Radhanath Swami, who said, definition of love, capacity to forgive endlessly. Capacity to forgive endlessly. But I feel like even that needs just a little bit of work. Hugo Award-winning American author Robert A. Heinlein says, love is that condition in which the happiness of another person is essential to your own. Which seems to me to be getting much closer to a definition that we can go with. Ultimately, though, I think that psychiatrist Harry Stack Sullivan of the University of Chicago may have given one definition that comes the closest, at least for me. This is what he had to say. When the happiness, security, and well-being of another person is as real or more to you than your own, you love that person. Basically, love is grounded in personal meaning, and it inclines us to action. Love is based in personal meaning, and it inclines us to action. When we love others, we feel that their happiness, security, and well-being matter to us greatly. And our actions communicate that feeling and understanding. Now, most religions teach its followers to not only practice that kind of love with those who are near and dear to them, but to also practice that kind of love with all of humanity. Now, presumably, this is in order to create a better world in which to live, one that's more humane and practices a deep appreciation for and valuing of life. And by my estimates, if we all could learn to truly love the rest of humanity, if the happiness, security, and well-being of all people motivated each of our actions, we certainly would be much closer to what the Christian faith calls heaven on earth. But for the remainder of my time today, I want to consider what Sophocles may have been trying to get at when he said one word frees us of all the weight and pain of life. That word is love. You see, I don't think that he was saying that it frees others from the pain of life. He's saying it frees us Or it frees those who practice that kind of love from the weight and the pain of life. First, an object lesson without an object. Once upon a time, a philosophy professor walked into a stage while teaching a stress management course and saw an audience full of students. And so she raises this glass of water. And, you know, as she raises a glass of water, everyone expects the typical, is the glass half empty or half full question. But instead, with a smile on her face, the professor asked, "How heavy is this glass of water that I'm holding?" Well, students started shouting out answers ranging from a couple of ounces to 8 ounces to a pound. And she replied, "You know, from my perspective, the absolute weight of this glass doesn't matter. It all depends on how long I hold the glass. If I hold it only a minute or two, it's pretty light. If I hold it for an hour straight, its weight might make me start aching a little. If I hold it for a day straight, my arm will likely cramp and feel numb and paralyzed, forcing me to drop the glass on the floor. In each case, the weight of the glass does not change. But the longer that I hold it, the heavier it feels to me." As the class shook their heads in agreement, she continued, "Your stress and your worries in life are very much like this glass of water. Think about them for a while and nothing happens. Think about them a bit longer and you begin to ache a little. Think about them all day long and you will feel completely numb and paralyzed, incapable of doing anything else until you drop them." So, how does love of others, as Sophocles said, free us from the weight and the pain of life? How are we changed when we extend active love? Well, for one, when we are highly engaged with the well-being of another person, we're somewhat freed from preoccupation with the self and its problems, with worrisome contemplations and with other destructive emotions. Disappointment and betrayal are unavoidable in life. And with them, we can get sucked down into a harmful spiral of bitterness and despair and resentment. But simple acts of loving kindness can transform us emotionally away from those particular perspectives. It's even been said that when you do not feel happy, smile anyway, and happiness will likely follow. And while that sounds very, very simplistic, it turns out it was a point of real curiosity to psychologists in the 70s and 80s. And time again, their studies suggested that smiling, even when you're not happy, smiling does indeed bring with it feelings of happiness. I challenge anyone to help another person out of love and not find yourself smiling. Showing love to others also has the self-serving benefit of making life a whole lot more interesting. Quite frankly, over time, selfishness becomes boring. When we seek the happiness, security, and well-being of another person, the world becomes more full and more engaging. Sir John Templeton actually once wrote that it is impossible to be bored if you love your neighbor. Loving others gives us a reason to develop our own gifts. Students Students learn more when they have to tutor younger peers, or when they learn in groups and are responsible for teaching each other. The reality is that many extraordinary people have fine-tuned their talents in the service of their neighbor. When we spend more time expressing our love to others, not so surprisingly, we make deeper friendships. Our friends are no longer the people we just hang out with, but they're the ones for whom we have a deep sense of connection and a fuller appreciation of. And in the difficult times of life, I suspect that we could all use more of those kinds of friends. Loving others is a source of hope. It's a source of hope because as we use our strengths for making differences in other people's lives, we begin to have greater confidence in our ability to shape the future, not just in other people's lives, but even in our own lives. Not so surprisingly then, outwardly loving other people's is also a source of joy. Happiness is to joy as optimism is to hope. Just being more optimistic can make us be more hopeful people. And likewise, practicing happiness makes us more joyful people. And I would wager that you'd be hard-pressed not to find yourself being happy as you are seeing the positive impact of sharing your love and the positive impact it has on them. One small example of how we're going to start doing that here at our own church is a new program that we're calling When We Eat, They Eat. And what we'll be doing is every time that we gather for food, we'll be bringing food to gather for others. That includes things like communion or our joint lunches on Sundays or Wednesday night dinners. And as we practice being more outwardly loving and gain the benefits of letting go of the stress in our lives, of finding more happiness and love and joy, and of having deeper relationships, we shouldn't be surprised to learn that it also may have a positive impact on our physical well-being as well. Literally, hundreds of scientific studies have been done on the connection between our emotional well-being and our physical well-being. And time after time, they've found that positive psychological attributes such as happiness and optimism and life satisfaction, they have a significant impact on a person's well-being as well. Just to back up some of these benefits with a few numbers. United Healthcare, along with a group that's called Volunteer Match, they did a survey entitled Do Good, Live Well. Several years back is when they did it. And they found that 41% of Americans volunteered an average of 100 hours a year. And of those people, 68% reported that volunteering made them feel physically healthier. But there's more than that. I'm going to run through some numbers. I try not to bore you too much with them. 89% reported that volunteering has improved my sense of well-being. 73% said that volunteering lowered their stress levels. 92% said that volunteering enriched their sense of purpose in life. 72% characterized themselves as optimistic compared to 60% of non-volunteers. 42% of volunteers reported a very good sense of meaning in their lives compared to 28% of non-volunteers. Finally, 96% said that volunteering simply made them feel happier. They also reported deeper friendships, sleeping better, and other benefits. Another interesting and related fact, an Alcoholics Anonymous study showed that helping other alcoholics at a robust level nearly doubles the recovery rate in the year after initially going dry. Those helping others also experienced a decrease in depression. Yes, some folks worry all too much about whether helping people, outwardly sharing love with them, will be reciprocated. Now, considering all the benefits that I've just shared with you that come from sharing love, I'd say it's a somewhat silly concern as whether or not it will be reciprocated. And anyway, if we're only sharing love in hopes of having love returned, is it truly a fully loving action? I'm not sure. I'm not sure that we'll ever have to we'll ever be able to have the perfect definition of love. But I do think we continue to have a fuller understanding of the impact of love. And I think one such understanding is a good way to conclude my reflection. It comes from Oliver Wendell Holmes, who simply said, "Love is the master key that opens the gates of happiness." This is a now give you the opportunity to share your thoughts about today's topic or the message. Are there those who have thoughts they want to share with this spiritual community? David.
I'm giving everybody else a chance to come up with something. Okay. Anyway, I wanted to mention I was very happy to see you this morning. I was concerned that after last Sunday's vote that you would wake up Monday and say, "What did I do?"
Who said I didn't do that?
Okay, well, as an act of love, you came back anyway. So Sandy, part of the main message is that love is caring about others. And that's the main thing. And I think part of it is also listening to others.
Yeah, who was it that said that the first act of love is listening?
Yeah. And it seemed to me, I remember something somewhere that a lot of times if you share with others your worries and problems, that you discover that they really aren't
that
bad.
Much. It's true. Yeah, absolutely.
You need that other
great points.
Perspective.
Yeah, two great points. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Deneen Ansley. Some of you know me from years ago, and one good thing is I'm going to be moving back to North Carolina from Ohio, so I'll be able to be here more often. And it's very apropos because it's the ending of an 8.5-year relationship that is bringing me back to North Carolina. So this is quite on point for me. And one of the things that I was thinking about is in the definitions you were giving about love, it's talking about loving another and wanting their well-being over your own. But in the beginning, you were talking about how love can bring anger. And, you know, it can bring hate because the opposite of love is apathy, you know, is indifference, right? So the opposite of love is not actually hate. So I'm living in the dissonance right now of not wanting the best for the person who hurt me. And I think that's a normal human thing.
Absolutely.
So I don't really know where all that fits in with this equation, because at the moment that you're in the heartbreak, you don't experience wanting the best for that person. And I've had to learn over the years to be gentle with myself until the love comes back. And that can take years for me. So, yeah.
I think you just answered your own
all
question.
That.
I think you answered your own question quite beautifully, actually. Are there others?
I'm Caroline. What you said this morning expands on what most of us have known all of our lives, do unto others. Well, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. You're actively doing because you have the well-being of others. Mm-hmm. Way up there. Yeah. And that love is not just a thing. heart on a Valentine. It is a verb, not just a noun.
Mm-hmm.
English major speaking. So, anyway.
From one English major to another, I appreciated that.
I was also an English major.
Three of us. They're all starting to get worried. Did you see the look on their faces? They're getting worried.
And fun fact, I graduated from UNCG in 99, and we had our large graduation at the Greensboro Coliseum, but our English departmental graduation was actually in the sanctuary.
Okay.
They rented out the sanctuary, and I walked and got my diploma for my English here. But anyway, that was not what I intended to say. I was going to talk just for a second about self-love. So that's something I learned a lot about on my cancer journey. And so, I don't know, I think at one point in my life, you know, I was taught about loving others and volunteering and doing good deeds and all of those types of things. And then I got into this mode where I felt like loving others was maybe a little more important than loving myself. And that was not very healthy. And so I had to learn a lot about, you know, how it needs to be an equal exchange. And I've realized that the more that we love our own selves, the easier it is to love other people. Just from a practical standpoint, you know, if we're taking care of our own well-being and things like that, we have more physical and emotional, you know, energy to give to others. And I think it's just really important to make sure that we're loving ourselves as equally as other people.
Absolutely. It's important to remember that if you're not taking care of yourself, ultimately you won't be able to take care of others.
Or if I may, in brief, put on your own oxygen mask first. And then you'll have the strength and the wherewithal to help others.
Absolutely. Chuck.
I had two things that I wanted to say quickly. In Facebook last week, I saw a picture outside of a church marquee, that said, love your neighbor, even if he's a Duke fan.
Chuck, have you managed to do that?
My neighbor's a steak fan. I love them anyway. I didn't want to get lost in what you said this morning when we were talking about love, the program that you were mentioning about when we eat, they eat. And as I understand it, that entails when we come on Wednesday nights for fellowship, we bring some food for other people.
Right.
A can of food, a bag of food, you bring a grocery bag full. I mean, it doesn't have to be one can.
Yeah.
I think there's some things around here that tells you some of the stuff that urban ministry needs. Yeah.
Some of you got those when you came in. Others, they're still on the back table. It has a list.
And the Lord's Supper is what it's often called. This is a meal when we have communion, so we're going to bring it when we have communion on the first
Absolutely.
Sunday.
Correct.
And when we have joint sessions and lunches.
Absolutely.
I just didn't want that to
yeah.
get lost because I think that's an important program we're starting.
Absolutely. I think it's very important. Thanks for expanding very much.